Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
And we're back after 2 weeks break. Here we are with my co-host, Matt Kritzberg. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good. About yourself?
Really good. Just got back from the movie, saw Dr. Sleep. It was okay.
Well, me, I've been watching, getting caught up on The Mandalorian on Disney Plus.
Oh boy, that's a good stuff. I do like me some Mandalorian. That second episode, especially, I don't want to give spoilers for people that don't want to see it, but it's good.
Well, we'll just say it's OFR Farm Report podcast approved. We have spoken.
That's right. We have spoken. Very good. All right. Well, Matt, we got actually several topics we want to get into here, and hopefully we don't go too long, but why don't we go ahead and jump right into it? There are some players that are playing actual baseball right now or just got finished playing baseball in the case of Mr. Drew Waters. Now, if you recall from our last discussion a couple weeks ago, we talked about Drew Waters hitting that home run in game one of the Premier League for Team USA. Last night, the tournament ended for Team USA. Unfortunately, they lost to Mexico in the bronze medal round. So as of right now, they are still on the outside looking in as far as the 2020 Olympics for baseball. They do have a couple more potential shots to get into the league, but as of right now, they're not in, which is a bummer. So what's been going on with Drew Waters, Matt?
Well, Drew Waters, he got into the game briefly last night. What happened was it was that they'd gone to extra innings versus Mexico. The winner gets the bronze medal in an Olympic bid, and the loser goes into the next round of qualifiers for another chance. But what happened was they did the goofy extra innings thing. In this version of it, they start with runners on first and second to start the 10th inning. And what happened was, of course, and I'm sure everybody does this, they try to bunt the runners over, which they did successfully for the U.S. Drew Waters was then next to come at bat. All they did was intentionally walk him, get the next two runner hitters out, and that ended it. So that was the end of that. Very, very brief, brave Caleb Teelbar was the pitcher for the U.S. in the bottom of the 10th inning, and the bases were loaded, and he gave up a broken bat flare to lose the game to where Mexico won it, and that sends them on to the next round where the U.S. goes into the 8-team America's qualifier coming up in March.
Right, and that one, fortunately, Mexico will not be playing in that since they are now qualified for the Olympics, so but they still have to fight through some really good teams, Cuba and Venezuela and Dominican Republic specifically, so and some other ones too. So it's going to be a tough road for Team USA. Not out of it, but boy, it should have been nice to have held on and win that bronze medal game against Mexico.
And it'll just be interesting to see what the composition of that team would be, talking about coming up in March, right in the smack in the middle of spring training. And if for some reason, if they don't make that one, the next round of qualifying would be in April when everybody's seasons have started. So who knows who would be available on those teams at that point.
Right. So winning it in March would be a really good idea, I think.
And even in April, I think what they could do is, let's say Joe Adell was a big part of this recent team, they could still send him on to the April version of the team and kind of use that under the guise of, hey, we can't bring him up to the big league club yet. He's still playing in these Olympic qualifiers. Sorry. And use that to hurt his service time.
Yeah. So Joe Adell, he only hit 394, 429, 697. With three home runs and 33 at bats, he was a monster for Team USA. So I don't know. Should he be number one prospect in baseball? I kind of starting to think he should be.
He probably should be, and I can't imagine he'll stay in that spot for long because he's going to be doing this in Anaheim very, very soon.
Yeah, that Angels fans got to be excited about the Adell Trout matchup here, or teammates being teammates here pretty soon in the same outfield.
All right. Got to get Trout a little bit of support. That would help.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to maybe spend a little bit. But, hey, we're not an Angels prospect, an Angels podcast. We're a Braves podcast. So let's talk about some other Braves that are playing baseball right now. So Christian Pache, went down to the Dominican Summer League. I'm sorry, the Dominican Winter League. He has not actually played much. I don't know if it's due to some sort of injury or if he's just not available right now, but he actually hasn't played in the last 2 weeks. But there's been some movement in the Puerto Rican League. Several Braves minor leaguers have shown up down there.
Yeah, we've got Ryan Castile, who was first baseman for Mississippi this season. He's 1-for-7 in the Puerto Rican League so far. You also have a couple of guys who spent a good deal of time at Gwinnett this season, and Jack Lopez, who's 0-for-7, and Jonathan Morales, who's 0-for-2 in his brief time down there.
Right, and in the Mexican Winter League, Alan Rangel still pitching pretty well. Had a couple outings over the last couple weeks, and I think he's allowed two earned runs over his last three appearances. So still doing pretty well, again, as a reliever. And like I said last time, I think that's probably where he's going to go for 2020 for the Braves organization. And then Elian Leyva, he has actually not pitched since November 8th. And that was an abbreviated outing, 4 1/3. He allowed 6 earned runs in that one. So I'm wondering if he's pulled something or has some sort of injury as well.
Yeah, and he's already pitched 25 2/3 innings during his time down there. And that on top of whatever workload he had this past season, I mean, it's starting to add up. So they may have just had a limit on him.
Maybe. All right. Well, there's your Winter League update. We got an interesting deadline coming up here on the baseball schedule. On the 20th of this coming week, which is Wednesday, all the major league teams have to set their 40-man roster and add anybody that in their minor leagues that would otherwise be eligible for the Rule 5 draft, which is held in December at the conclusion of the winter meetings. Matt, who are the Braves looking at as potential guys that could be taken?
Well, the main four guys you're looking at are William Contreras, catcher at Mississippi. You got Tucker Davidson, pitcher at Gwinnett. Jacile De La Cruz, pitcher from Mississippi. And Christian Pache, number one prospect in the Braves organization, who's currently at Gwinnett. But those are the four guys that basically guarantee to be protected for Rule 5. And there are a number of other pitchers that can conceivably be on the list, and those are the ones that will be interesting to see whether or not they decide to protect them.
The Braves have been, you know, kind of surprising, I think, with who they have protected. They've actually been really stingy over the last several years about handing over those 40-man roster spots, and so far they haven't really been hurt by it. You know, a couple years ago, we were anticipating Dustin Peterson being protected, and he never was. Travis DeMeritt was never protected, and they held on to him, and he was actually a trade piece for him in the Shane Green deal. So fortunately, nobody took him. So right now, it looks like there's 7 spots on the 40-man roster. So if those 4 get added, that'll only leave 3 left over for new acquisitions. Now, it's possible that there could be some trades in the work as well. It's not unusual for teams that have a lot of players that they need to protect to go ahead and trade those off to teams that have more room. I'm not saying that'll happen with the Braves, and I do not anticipate any of the 4 that you mentioned, Matt, to be traded over the next couple days. But I'll just throw that out there as a possibility, I guess.
Now, there's no real roster crunch here, and there's even a couple of guys who are currently on the 40-man, and John Ryan Murphy and Rafael Ortega, who could easily be jettisoned to create extra room if they needed it. Now there's a few pitchers that these will be the interesting ones to see. These are guys that could go either way. Those 4 other guys I've named earlier, those are the guys that will be definitely protected. Now you got guys like Thomas Burrows, Brad Roney, Kurt Hoekstra, Philip Pfeiffer, and Corbin Klaus, who were potentially on the fence on that. Obviously Corbin Klaus is going to be out now that he just had recent surgery, but of those other 4 guys, do you see any of those being guys they would possibly protect?
They're always really protective of left-handed pitchers. So Phil Pfeiffer is the guy that jumps out there as maybe as a possibility.
after he's kind of turned his career around. But on the other hand, he's also 27 years old, you know, so you can see it kind of going a couple different ways there. You could, a team could look, hey, there's a 27-year-old that's eligible. We got a, you know, there's a 26-man roster now. Maybe we can afford to hold on to a guy like that all year, and they'll take a chance on him. And if it doesn't work out, they just, you know, send him back to the Braves. So Pfeiffer's a guy that definitely, if he's not protected, could possibly be taken.
Yeah, that's the one guy I could see that could, especially he put in a little bit of time at AAA towards the end of the year, and he did, had some success there. So I could see that being a possibility with a, but with Brad Roney's showing in the AFL, even though he hasn't pitched a AAA yet, I could see him being possibly on somebody's radar, although rather unlikely that he'd get picked. But that one's always a possibility. It wouldn't be a total shot to see the Braves protect him.
And then beyond that, there's also the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft. Generally, anybody that's eligible that's on a roster lower than AAA is eligible for that. So what the Braves typically do is just overload the Gwinnett Stripers roster with, you know, everybody they can fit on there that that could possibly be taken. Now, the Braves have, over the last couple of years, been very aggressive in the minor league portion. Last year, they took Jason Creasy, they took Riley Unruh, and Jose Rafael de Paula. And all three of those they kept and were, you know, were pretty useful pieces in the upper minor leagues. So I expect the Braves again to do that. It'll be interesting if there's anybody that gets taken from the Braves. And the guy I'm looking at as far as that as a possibility is Delmer Mejia, if he's not put on the Stripers roster.
Yeah, they had Stripers had so many minor league vets praying for them last season that they could easily afford to. I mean, whoever they want to protect, they should be able to protect any without any real problems. But it's interesting to see Alex and his crew. Like you said, they picked a couple of guys from other organizations last year. It's going to be really interesting to see if they continue that trend again this season. Stop wasting my time. You know what I want. You know what I need. Oh, maybe you don't. Do I have to come right flat out and tell you everything? Give me some money. Just today, New York Times came out with a more detailed look at the proposal that Major League Baseball is throwing out there in their negotiations with Minor League Baseball as far as the contraction that we had talked about. I guess it was about 4 weeks ago, a couple podcasts ago. So that proposal would cut between 40 and 42 teams total out of Minor League Baseball. And the New York Times actually published a list of what would be cut. And it's quite devastating, especially for the short season leagues. The entire Pioneer League would be on the chopping block as far as this goes. The entire Appalachian League, including the Danville Braves, with the exception of the Pulaski Yankees, would be eliminated, with the Yankees moving up, the Pulaski Yankees moving up to low A. Another team on here that would be contract would be the Florida Fire Frogs. And I also see also for the Florida State League, the Daytona Tortugas. Not coincidentally, those are also the two teams that are the biggest outliers as far as travel. Most of the teams in the Florida State Leagues are concentrated either Tampa or South on the Gulf side or over on the West Palm Beach side. Those were the, you know, the teams that are primarily located, with Daytona and the Florida Fire Frogs outliers, you know, farther north. So you can kind of see why maybe they were put on the list. Carolina League, the Frederick Keys, that's Frederick, Maryland. That's, again, kind of the farthest north. I think what you're seeing here is teams that they're looking to eliminate are kind of outliers as far as travel. Hagerstown, Maryland Suns is on the list as well. But the biggest loss, as far as I'm concerned, is the short season leagues, the Appalachian League, the Pioneer League, the New York Penn League, all scheduled for elimination. Yeah, and we kind of speculated on that a couple of podcasts ago when that first popped up, saying with a later draft, that would almost kind of eliminate the need for short season teams, and they would just move everything back in their complexes. Like, instead of Danville, you'd have just games being played at the GCL complex level for the Braves.
And as we said last time, you can kind of see why the Major League Baseball would be interested in that. Cutting all those jobs would allow them to reallocate that money. It would allow them to provide better facilities and pay for the other minor leaguers. But it would cut about 1,200 paying professional minor league jobs. Quite frankly, it would devastate a lot of these smaller communities here. I know Danville, the city of Danville, loves having the Braves there. The Appalachian League as a whole improved their attendance by over 5% just last year. So none of this is from a standpoint of they're just not drawing. Minor league baseball is really having a resurgence right now as far as attendance. So it's a kind of a bitter pill to see this list here and knowing that a lot of these are perfectly good places for affiliated baseball to be in. It's, I think I described it last time, this plan is kind of gross. I feel even stronger about that now. And so just where I'm sitting at, as far as the South Atlantic League, which I think a lot of people listening are probably Rome Braves fans. Rome is not on the list. Three South Atlantic League teams are, though. The West Virginia Power, which plays out of Charleston, West Virginia. Again, these are kind of the far out outposts of the league, right? So West Virginia, and then Hagerstown, and then probably the biggest surprise for me, the Lexington Legends out of Lexington, Kentucky, which is a fantastic team, has been for a long time, and is one of the higher level attendance teams in the South Atlantic League, would be eliminated by this plan.
Yeah, and even beyond that, there's some direct effects for Braves fans as well, not just because of the teams that they're looking at eliminating, but anytime there's some prime prospects coming through Double A for Mississippi, a lot of the time that people living in Georgia, the only opportunity they have to see them is possibly when they go to Chattanooga for their annual visit there, and Chattanooga is now one of the teams on the list, so that would eliminate the ability for Braves fans to actually see some of their Double A minor leaguers in person.
Yeah. Traditionally, every year I take a trip up to Chattanooga to try to catch the Mississippi Braves. If I can't catch them there, I try to catch them in Montgomery or Birmingham. So, yeah. So this plan doesn't make me happy pretty much at all. I think there's ways that they can improve the pay and still keep the short season leagues. Especially, you know, the Appalachian League, it's, you know, that hits close to home. Literally, my family is from the Appalachian region. A lot of these towns are, you know, these minor league teams are a big part of the fabric of the communities there. And to close these down would be bad. I know the plan is to convert some of these into the quote unquote dream league of independent league. I can't see that flying. That's not going to be something that's well attended. And this is just a shame. And hopefully this gets negotiated away.
Yeah. And of course, it should be said that this is just a proposal from Major League Baseball. This isn't set in stone by any means, and it's nowhere near finalized. But you can kind of see the direction that they're leaning and heading with some of these. But I can't imagine it's going to go through as is 100%. With this plan intact.
And minor league commissioner Pat O'Connor is quoted in the article by saying, quoted, this is a quote, "My job is to save baseball in all 42 of these communities, if that's possible." So for the communities like Lexington, Kentucky, communities like Charleston, West Virginia, communities like Danville, Virginia, this is quite a blow.
But even in larger places, like just like talking about Chattanooga, Chattanooga is way too big a city not to have some sort of affiliated baseball. So I think there'll be some reconfiguration to this whole plan to keep a lot of this intact.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they have a stadium that is smack downtown that, you know, is less than 10 years old. It's a fine facility, and I'm not sure what the reason would be to close out the lookouts unless it's to possibly move maybe a high A or a single A team there, maybe downsize it from double A to high A or low A. But it makes no sense to close down, you know, to remove a team from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yeah, because it doesn't even make sense from a geographic standpoint, because you have the Tennessee Smokies, the Cubs AA affiliate located in Kodak. That's not a gigantic distance by any means. And, of course, from Birmingham to Chattanooga is not much of a drop at all. So, I mean, there's reasonings beyond the geographic portion of it.
Yeah. They have a bit here about the Appalachian team in Elizabethton, Tennessee, which is a place I've been to several times. And it's a... you know, a really nice place right by a river. It's very pretty. And the city was pressured by Minnesota, the Minnesota Twins, which is its affiliate of the Minnesota Twins, to basically spent about $1 million modernizing that facility just last year. And they deferred spending that on a police station renovation. They had the two projects. They could spend one or the other. And they chose, we want to keep our baseball team. They chose renovating that stadium. And now baseball is saying, oh, that's nice. We're going to eliminate your team now.
Yeah, and I saw a similar type story about Erie in the Eastern League, that they have done some significant renovations and are in the process of doing even more. And they were on the chopping block list as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, hopefully this will get negotiated away, or at least forestalled, or minimized as much as possible. There's no doubt that, you know, travel, realignment, that all are really good points. There are some facilities that absolutely need to be modernized, or the teams need to be moved. But just chopping off 42 teams, that is throwing out the baby with the bathwater, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I agree fully, especially on the travel issues. There can be some realignment there, but it doesn't have to involve lopping off 42 different cities.
Yeah. All right. Well, we mentioned the Fire Frogs as being on the chopping block in this. The stadium that the Fire Frogs had been operating in, Osceola County Stadium, the lease for the Fire Frogs there was bought out by the stadium commission, by the county. And the stadium has essentially been completely converted over to soccer. So the Fire Frogs have been homeless since the end of the season. With no word on where they will actually end up going. However, I did see on a site called Ballpark Biz, they did track it down, a filing by the company that owns the Fire Frogs is a Tennessee-based company, and they put in a motion with the Orange County Clerk's Office to try to sell the club to a local ownership group based out of Cocoa, Florida, which is, of course, on the east coast of Florida, with the idea that they would buy the club and move them actually back to Brevard County. The Fire Frogs were originally the Brevard County Manatees, and they moved to Kissimmee before the 2016 season, simultaneously with signing the affiliate agreement with the Braves. So, if this goes into effect, if the purchase is agreed upon, and the deadline for that is apparently December 1st, that they would possibly get moved back to Brevard County, perhaps going to a stadium in the city of Cocoa. There's not a lot of places there. I think the most likely place is a complex called the Cocoa Expo Sports Center, or the Coastal Expo Sports Center. I've seen it both ways. It looks like maybe there's something going on there, but the sale is contingent on getting all necessary permissions. And that, so this would have to be signed off on by Minor League Baseball, by Major League Baseball, and by the Florida State League. And then, of course, this article comes out saying that the whole franchise could be eliminated. So I don't know if I was a potential buyer, that would certainly sour my interest in buying the Fire Frogs asset unless I got some kind of words on what sort of buyout that Major League Baseball would be giving me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if it's not going to cover what they put into it or make them at least a little bit of a profit, they're not going to get on board with this. I mean, this whole thing is just a sorry mess. And we're about 4.5 months out from the beginning of the 2020 baseball season, still don't have any specific idea of where they're going to play.
I think it might be possible they could go to a nearby university as well. I believe it's called Rollins College. They renovated their baseball stadium not too long ago. And at least at one point, the Brevard County Manatees were thinking about moving there anyway before they went ahead and moved all the way to Kissimmee and became the Fire Frogs. So I would think that that facility may be a possibility as well. I mean, there's lots of places to play baseball in Florida, obviously, but we're still waiting for a final word on where the Fire Frogs are going to go. But it looks like it is definitely something is in the works here as far as selling the team and moving it to Cocoa, Florida.
And it is definitely the sooner the better, so they could get in the business of baseball, sell season tickets, sponsorships, all the things the club has to do in order to make money.
Well, it's a 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59 automobile. It's a 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69.
We do have our OFR Top 50 Braves Prospects list that is coming out every Thursday. So far, we've had two portions of that come out with 10 prospects each. So we direct you over to outfieldflyrule.com to follow along with that. We want to talk a little bit about the list. Obviously, we don't want to, belabor the point. Feel free to go over and read it for yourself. We have write-ups for all the players. But just, Matt, on the back half of these lists here, at some point when you're making these lists, there comes a time where it's kind of you're trying to figure out, okay, who's number 20 versus 21 or 32 versus 33. And it almost kind of comes a little meaningless. And I don't mean that in that it's a pointless exercise, but just that the rankings themselves don't mean necessarily that absolutely this is the 32nd best prospect. This is the 33rd best prospect. And it becomes more of a which guys are more interesting. And which guys, quite frankly, do we just want to write about more?
Yes, when you get to the tail end of that list there, and that's where we'd come up. We actually knocked a few guys off who may have, quote unquote, been more deserving of being on a list like that. But there's certain guys specifically I'd want to talk about, like Braxton Davidson and Brandall Mesquita, that may not necessarily be in the top 50 players in the organization, but definitely have more interesting stories to talk about.
Yeah. Neither one of those were actually in my top 50. We made our 50s and combined them, and then we fiddled with it, right? So we want to talk about Braxton Davidson. Braxton Davidson's on the list at the back end. Brandall Mesquita is a very interesting talent and has an interesting story. So he's on, and maybe a guy who maybe has a slightly better chance of making it to the major leagues at this point, but just isn't as interesting, maybe gets dumped off. That's not a knock on anybody, but, we all know that, for example, relief pitcher prospects, for the most part, even if they make the majors, they're not going to make a huge difference. Like the Craig Kimbrels of the world, where they were drafted and got to the majors and then made a huge impact on several major league teams. Like that's very much the exception to the rule, right? Most relievers in the major leagues were guys that started in the minors and couldn't make it as a starter, but their stuff was good enough to be relievers. The Braves' huge free agent signing, Will Smith from Thursday, is a perfect example of this. He was a starter all through the minor leagues and was a starter when he was first promoted up to the majors with the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, and there's other guys too. Like I say, Chad Sabatka, he was on our list over the last couple of seasons, but now he's in a position where he's just basically riding the Gwinnett Atlanta shuttle, and will probably likely not make a huge impact at the major league level in his career. But it's just always stories like that. There's different versions and reasons why they would be or not be on our list.
Right. There's guys that we talk about quite a bit on this podcast that aren't on this list. You know, guys that we think very highly of. I think very highly of Kurt Hoekstra. He very much impressed me over the course of last year. He's not on the top 50. Maybe he should be. Maybe he's got a better chance of making the majors than some of these guys. But at some point, we can't have relief pitchers making the list over kind of more upside guys that maybe are still teenagers. They still have a long way to go to make the majors if they make it at all. But they're just kind of more interesting to kind of hang hopes on.
Yeah, and there's a couple of other guys here at the tail end of the list too. People are just like, why are these guys so far down? Talking about like Stephen Piolini or Jared Johnson show up between our 41 and 50s. That's just because they just don't have any kind of track record to speak of as a professional. But give them a season or even mid-season list, they could shoot up easily, just depending on that.
Right, and I would rather write about guys like that than write about the fourth best reliever on the Fire Frogs, you know?
Because we're the ones that have to write these things, and sometimes we don't want to be bored either.
Yeah, definitely. That is, in fact, I would say that might be the most important consideration, to be honest. If we're not amusing ourselves,
then what's this all been about?
Yeah. Why are we doing this podcast? If we aren't having fun, then it doesn't make any sense for us to keep doing this. Are you still having fun, Matt?
I'm having a blast.
Okay. Well, that's probably a good place to wrap it up for this week then. We're having a blast and we're enjoying sharing this off season with you. Be sure to check us out. When do you think we'll do this again, Matt? You want to do 2 weeks again or you want to try again next week?
Well, that'll be Thanksgiving weekend. So I'm fine that. I don't know if that'll happen, but we'll just kind of keep things in mind. And if who knows if something big goes down trade-wise and involves prospects, who knows? May just throw up the emergency bat signal and do a quickie.
Yeah. All right. So everybody have a good week. And then keep an eye out for outfieldflyrule.com. Every Thursday, new set of prospects. The 21 through 30 is coming up on the 21st.
Yeah, and then the 11 and through 20 will come out on Thanksgiving Day. So that'll be a little bit of light reading for when you're having to deal with family members. So there'll be some fun there. And then the final week after that, next Thursday, we'll do 1 through 10.
Yep. And then right after that will be the winter meetings when, hopefully a lot of action takes place. All right, everyone, have a great week.
Have a good one.
No. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Non. Je ne regrette rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, Ça commence.